Hey Trailblazers, there's always been one stop between Houston and the Guadalupe Mountains that has mattered to me the most, and that's my stop at Mom's Kitchen Express in Van Horn, Texas. Over the years, I've told our hiking community about this little gem out in West Texas and to swing by when they're heading to the Guads for a wonderful meal. For me, it was always a joy to stop by and hear Mr. Espinosa saying, "Another one of your hikers stopped by for a meal." They had to close the restaurant down for a couple of years due to family needs, but there's some exciting news. Mom's Kitchen Express is open once again. Same wonderful recipes, and it still feels like home. It still carries the legacy of the man who loved this land as much as we do. So if you're heading out to the Guadalupe Mountains or just passing through Van Horn, make sure you stop by for a meal and to tell them hi from the Trailblazing Texas podcast community. Mr. Espinosa, you were missed. Now on with the episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast, where we embark on a journey through our diverse Texas landscapes and breathtaking trails while always engaging with our amazing Texas hiking community. So settle in, tighten up those bootlaces, and get ready for the thrilling tales awaiting for you on this episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast. I'm your host, Jason, and today we have a special guest all the way from San Angelo State Park. We have Interpretive Ranger Kenny. Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, happy to be here.
So how's it going these days at the park?
Very busy. It just never stops. But right now, after having such a very luxurious, kind of mild summer, it's kind of hit a couple notches. It's very hot out right now, especially out here in West Texas.
And when is your busy season for the park?
I would say for us, our busy season starts hitting, I would say, fall, winter, and also the spring. Summer's probably our lull period, but with my position, I always try to keep something interesting going on. Out here in San Angelo, we get quite a few wildflowers out here. So I would say, like, our Texas winters and our nice springs is probably our busiest time because everyone wants to come out and see the wildflowers that we have out here.
Nice. We will definitely get into this a little bit later, but it shocked me. I had no idea when I was doing research about San Angelo State Park how massive it is. Mm-hmm. And you have two units. There's two trail maps. And I was just like, and what was really disappointing for me is, so I've been to the Guads about 25 times and I drive by, I see the sign to from I-10 to go up to San Angelo. I knew there was a state park and I had no idea. So the next trip to the Guads, I'm definitely making a stop.
It's definitely worth the stop here in town. There's a lot of little local history here. And then, of course, the state park just adds to it.
Yeah. All right. Well, this is something that I started maybe about a month or two ago, is a lightning round. And I call it lightning round because I have no idea what else to call it. So what it is, it's questions that you have not seen. The listeners know, they get excited. I've had a lot of comments that they enjoy it. These are secret questions. You don't know what is coming. And it's just short answer. First kind of word that comes to your mind. If it's not very lightning-y, if that's even a word, through the edit, I'm going to do my best to make it seem lightning-y. So are you ready?
I am ready.
All right. Favorite season for hiking in the park?
Mine was going to be, say, spring. Definitely not the summer, but spring for me, just because it really shows all the different diversity we have at the park. And especially, like I said, this past spring, we got a lot of wildflowers. So I got to see a lot of different colors that I did not get to see when I first started at the park. So I'm going to say spring. It's not too hot, but it's also not too cold.
All right. If you had one free day at the park, what activity are you picking?
For me, I would be hiking for sure. But for anyone who's never been out here before, I would say I would pick a day to go see the bison and the longhorn that we have. I feel like that's like, if you've never been here before, it's a must do for sure.
That was another shocker. You have Longhorn and Bison. I thought Caprock was the only Bison park, but I was wrong.
No, we have both, and they all have their own little personalities.
Most surprising animal you've seen at the park?
Surprising animal? I have yet to see it, but other visitors have sent photos into me about it. Is we have beaver at the park, which is surprising for West Texas, but we do have a sometimes river that flows through our park, and these beavers like to hang out where it kind of puddles. So I'm going to say it's like a mystical being that we have here at the park, but beavers, they're common in other places, but out here in West Texas, I showed the kids that we have beaver and they're like, what? And I'm like, yeah, we have beaver in the park.
I had one of those surprising animals. I was visiting a friend and I was staying at Abilene State Park, mm-hmm. and I woke up, I was packing up, I was heading to Caprock, and a turkey walked up into camp. And yes, I know Texas, I know hunters, and there's turkey hunting and stuff, but I've never seen a, you know, one out in the wild. And oh, that was absolutely amazing. So nice. All right. When you're hiking, what is your go-to trail snack?
Oh, I feel like it can change. Recently, my go-to has been sour gummy worms. And I've also really liked taking Pop-Tarts out on the trail, not for the wildlife, but just for me. So those are like my go-to, but it does vary because sometimes I'm like more of an M&M person or whatever have you, or like bringing a bag of Cheez-Its or some chips. But right now, Pop-Tarts and sour gummy worms, satisfying that sweet tooth on the trail.
Absolutely. So in your opinion, what is one thing visitors always forget to bring?
It can vary. I would say out here, so I've seen people hiking out in flip-flops and slides. So I would say, I would say sometimes the sturdy shoes. But, you know, I think the biggest like outdoorsy thing is not enough water, especially right now in the summer heat. Anytime I'm working our entrance station, I'm like, do you have water? Because they're coming in at 12 or 1 p.m. And I'm like, please have water. So I think that's the biggest thing out here is just I see a lot of people come out here and not have anything, or they'll have like a can of soda. And I'm like, oh, you're going to have a time for sure.
It's funny that you say that. Every state park so far that's been on the podcast, I think I've had 6 recordings. That right there, it's water, water, water. And to the listeners, this should be telling you something. Right? They're not just making up this answer. There's a reason why every answer is you don't bring enough water. So please make sure you are prepared. All right. What is one feature at the park that you wish every visitor would stop to appreciate?
I think at our park, I think one thing I appreciate or would want people to appreciate is one, we have so many areas to explore, and so a lot of times people will only explore one side of the park. One of my favorite units or campgrounds to explore is our Riverbend campground, and I've posted a couple photos and reels from that particular campground, and people are like, where is this? And I'm like, it's right here at the campground. And so one feature I would want people to like kind of go explore more is just along the north side of the park a little bit. And yeah, just have fun, like kind of seeing what's out there. We have a lot of history with our park.
Pick your poison. You're on the trail and you have a day of hiking. Would you rather have a trail full of mosquitoes or horseflies?
Mosquitoes. I've lived that, so I can handle mosquitoes. They're awful, but I can do it.
Nobody's ever picked horseflies. I hate those suckers. All right. Favorite time at the park, sunrise or sunset?
For me out here in West Texas, I have to say the sunset. I'm also not a morning person, so I love coming, especially out in the evenings, to the park. And we have basically an unobstructed view of the sunset. So that's my favorite part to see.
What part of the park do you hope never changes?
For me, I hope we continue to have the history and relationship with Longhorns and Bison. I also love the vast network of trails that we have, and also the community that like puts into those trail work. So for me, I think just like continue that relationship with the history past that we have with those resources, and kind of keeping that up.
What do you think is harder to explain to a group of visitors? Why they should not try to pet the wildlife, or why they should not feed the wildlife?
I think it's harder to explain to them not to feed them. Specifically at our park, though, I constantly have to tell people you can't pet the bison. But that conversation is pretty easy, because I can literally look at the bison and tell you, look, there is one of you and 45 of them, and there's a measly little fence in between, and you would not win that fight. So I think it's a harder conversation to tell people not to feed wildlife out here than petting them, because they can actually see like, oh yeah, I shouldn't be petting this right now.
And it's funny, like, talk about the bison. So I love going to Caprock, and I don't know what it is, if it's either a young bull or maybe an old bull that's been kicked out of that main herd, but you have these solo ones. And so you'll be just kind of flying down the trail and round this corner, and, you know, he's right there, and mm-hmm. he kind of jumps, I jump, we just kind of mm-hmm. look at each other, and, you know, I slowly back off, and usually they kind of move on, but, oh man, the bison scare the crap out of me.
They will do that too, especially we do feed them, because sometimes we don't get enough grass in our pasture. And sometimes as I'm driving our little feed trailer down, they will just pop out of the mesquite and absolutely scare the crap out of me.
Nice. All right. So here's a couple of would you rather. So would you rather clean a park restroom after a busy holiday weekend, or lead a group of 20 unsupervised fifth graders on a hike?
That's a good one, because I feel like I've done both before. I feel like I would rather lead a group of fifth graders, because out here, everything wants to poke and prod you. So I feel like it wouldn't be too hard to wrangle them in on the trail.
Yep.
Sometimes the bathrooms can get a little sauna-y and hot.
Yeah. I think it was Hannah at Choke Canyon, when she came on, she talked about, you know, everything out there is going to poke or mm-hmm. prod you, but also the stinging insects, like they're all everywhere, ants and wasps and yellow jackets mm-hmm. and all that stuff. So that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, we get cactus everywhere. So I feel like I can intimidate the fifth graders to stay on trail and all that good stuff. Whereas bathroom cleaning, while it is great to get away from it a little bit, sometimes those bathrooms, man, they can be a little intense.
All right, would you rather explain leave no trace principles to a stubborn adult for every single day for a month, or lead a group of 50 kindergartners on a nature hike after snack time?
Oh, after snack time, they're usually pretty conked out, but I would say I wouldn't mind teaching leave no trace to a stubborn adult. That's definitely something I have done before, and it definitely has its challenges, because it depends on like what perspective they're coming from. So I'm going to go with teaching an adult about leave no trace.
All right. Nice. Last question. This is the most important question of the podcast, and this will dictate the direction that we go and the duration. Are you ready?
I am.
All right. What is your favorite Texas hiking podcast?
This one right here.
Nice. I love it. As a host, it warms my heart. And with that question, I got to tell you, I'm batting 1,000. Like, everybody has picked this podcast. So
I was going to say, I've already listened to an episode, so you must be doing something right.
That's right. I hear that. All right. So as we kind of dive into the episode, I personally think it's important. It's important for me, and I know it's important to the listeners, because I get feedback. But I want the listeners to have the opportunity to get to know you. So, you know, this first part of the episode, I really want to dive into a little bit about you, and then we'll jump into the park a bit later. But so for you, how long have you worked for Texas Parks and Wildlife?
So this is a very weird answer, but I've been here at my park for just about a year now. But before that, I was a TPWD volunteer, and I also have worked with another organization called Texas Master Naturalist, which is essentially a professional volunteer organization and a group of passionate people. So I've worked alongside as a volunteer for TPWD for probably close to 5-ish years, if not longer. But worked in a professional capacity with TPWD. I've worked here for about a year, and then I've worked at several other national parks and stuff like that, and other professional career opportunities that I've had over the years.
Okay, and so why San Angelo State Park?
So for me, I'm originally from Southeast Texas, so I came from the swamps and stuff. And so in this field, sometimes it's easier said than done to get in positions like this. So at the end of my last term of being a park ranger at Big Thicket, I was starting to put my applications out to different parks that were hiring for interpreters because that's the role I wanted to go for. And San Angelo came up. I had a really good interview with the staff here, and it just felt really good. I was also had another opportunity to continue my path in PS, but I really loved working for state parks and just the relationship with that. And so, yeah, San Angelo just kind of clicked a lot of boxes for me, and I liked the challenge of I don't have to be in the swamp anymore. So it was a different kind of challenge that I felt like I was ready to take on, and then yeah, it was just the next step in my professional development that I wanted to do. And so I got a lot of opportunities out of it. And I get to hang out with bison and longhorn most days.
Talking about interpretive ranger, can you kind of let the listeners know what does that incorporate? And then what does a typical day look like for you?
So an interpretive ranger, I'm usually like the face of the park. And I get to do the educational based programming. So I work a lot with school groups. I also work with normal visitors day to day. We are typically the rangers that are hosting all the programs that you see at your state parks. TPWD is also very special in the sense that there's usually one interpreter per park. So if you don't see as many programs, please just know that we are trying our best. But we get to, you know, continuously learn about our park ourselves, but then we get to share that love and passion and what we learn to the visitors themselves. So I say I learn and then I get to teach it. And our typical day to day, while this can vary from park to park, you know, in San Angelo, we are a very vastly big park. And so for me, my day to day can vary a lot. Typically, I'm on a normal day where I'm not pulled to do a certain project, hopefully answering some emails, planning some cool program coming up, working with teachers, librarians, and the local community, setting up events or working with them on their events and how I can contribute to that, and brushing up, making sure I have accurate knowledge that I'm giving out to the public. But my day-to-day can switch up. So sometimes I'm in our entrance station, interacting with visitors, answering questions. There are days where I am cleaning bathrooms and making sure the park stays clean, or I'm out on the trails, making sure the trails are staying up to date, and all sorts of stuff. So it can vary from day to day, actually. But in a general sense, I'm always learning. I'm always out and about in the park and just having a fun time and trying not to get sunburnt out here.
Yeah. If you kind of look back, what inspired you to get into kind of the volunteering and then also, you know, how that translated into park work?
Yeah. So in high school, I was a part of a volunteer organization called Key Club. And so that really instilled, like, I really got a lot of enjoyment out of helping the community. And so as I went into college, I figured out I really like being outdoors. And so I would do a lot of stuff with that as I developed and learned more stuff about this career field. What really got me into interpretation in this career field was, you know, for the longest time, I wanted to be a wildlife biologist. And don't get me wrong, I still do some days. But this job, I get to do a little bit of that, and I still get the enjoyment of interacting with the public. When COVID had hit, I had lost a lot of my internship possibilities happening. And then I got the opportunity to do a kind of online virtual education thing with Girl Scouts. And so I got to be a camp counselor, and I found that, you know, teaching kids like some basic outdoor skills, like you know, you're talking about kids who've never been outside before or haven't had those experiences before and just seeing like their eyes light up was a huge, like, kind of turning point for me. And after that internship, that turned into a summer internship in Alaska, where I got a lot more hands-on with educational programming. And like I said, seeing kids who have never fished before and teaching them how to fish and like showing them like holding a fish for the first time. That was like a really magical moment for me. And yeah, I just kept it going. And then with other volunteer organizations through Master Naturalist, I kept getting to do those opportunities and through more internships until I landed here.
Nice. So what is your favorite part of your job?
My favorite part of the job is honestly like when the program is over and people come up to me and they're just like, wow, like they didn't know anything. Or they continuously ask, like, you know, they ask me questions about like what they could do more and stuff. So for me, it's always like the program's awesome, but it's the after where everyone's like, oh my God, I did not know that. I've had a lot of programs, especially with our star parties. We've done scorpion hunts where people are like, I didn't know we had scorpions. And I'm like, yes. So I think it's always the after, seeing like I said, that sparkle in their eye. And just, you know, knowing that they're going to come back or at least like, you know, continue exploring other parts of Texas and with like a renewed interest and that they didn't have before.
So with that being said, do you have a favorite moment or a favorite memory at the park?
For me, I was going to say the first time me and my coworkers fed the bison and longhorn. So my first week here, they're like, well, you're going to be doing this. So they showed me how to do it and we were standing in the longhorn side of our pastures and a bison came up and licked my ranger friend's elbow. That was a very standout moment to me. And like I said, all of our longhorn and some of our bison have their own personalities. And I will never forget that a bison licked his elbow. It's a very weird moment, but it does stand out to me.
Outside of having to feed the bison in longhorns, what's one thing about your job that you think visitors would find surprising?
I would say, like in my role specifically, how much we do in a different kind of day. As I mentioned before, some days I'm in the office, some days I'm planning programs or I'm out in the community. But then there are days where you'll catch me cleaning the bathrooms and stuff. So I would say being versatile in our role can be the most surprising thing. Sometimes people will look at my role and like, oh, well, all you do is programs. I'm like, that's not the case. So a lot of it's just the versatility of this role. We get a lot of freedom in what we get to do. I get a lot of freedom to explore the park, but sometimes, you know, you got to lock in and got to help cover the park where you can.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so let's start to dive into the park. And thank you for that and letting the listeners know, and even myself a little bit about you. I find it fascinating, you know, because every state park that's been on the podcast so far, the passion that the people have towards service, mm-hmm. towards, you know, history, towards our state, towards our wildlife, it's mm-hmm. It's truly been surprising in a very positive way. Like, you clearly know that to have that job, you have to care a little bit, but mm-hmm. I mean,
I was going to say like another surprising aspect of this job is like, you know, we don't get paid a whole lot. Not that we ask for it anyways. A lot of us, like you said, we have a passion and being outdoors and sharing that passion with other people. So, you know, your normal person who, you know, goes to their 9-to-5, if they come out to the park, they can feel comfortable knowing that they're in a safe place, that, you know, they can ask any one of us a question. So a lot of us, like I said, we don't do it for the money. We do it because we have a passion and we want to have more people come outdoors and be good stewards of the land.
Absolutely. And to the listeners, and well, I mean, I guess if you're a visitor and you're listening to this, you're a listener, you are definitely cared about. Mm-hmm. Like, you guys care about every single visitor that shows up to that booth to pay or say, hey, I have a reservation. And that's, again, that really, I mean, I knew mm-hmm. you guys have to care a little bit, right? to have the job, but the passion, and you can see it, hear it in your voice. So it's absolutely pretty spectacular. So, all right, jumping into the park. What makes San Angelo State Park a must visit for someone who's never been?
Yeah, I think for us, you mentioned before, we are one of two state parks that have bison. Our bison are not free roaming like Caprock. They do have several hundred acres of pasture that they do roam, but people can come up very close to the bison during when we do feed them and actually get to see them really up close. Whereas Caprock, like, you could see them up close, but, you know, they're free roaming, so it's never guaranteed. And I always do preface that with people, like, sometimes the bison don't always want to come up. 90% of the time they do. So I would say, like, the must-see is our bison, because you can view them very close in a very safe manner. Same with our longhorn. We have a portion of the official state herd of longhorns here at our state park. And so, you know, people who don't normally grow up on a farm or in rural areas, this is the first time they're seeing what little kids typically call them, giant hairy cows. And you get to tell them about, like, you know, all the cool little facts about bison and why they're here and stuff like that. So that is the, I would say, the must see. Like, if you only come out to the park and, you know, you're taking your time to come out here, definitely come on a day where we're feeding the bison. Of course, you can see them anytime, but I would say you're guaranteed to see them when we do feed. That's the best options. And then, of course, like, take a quick stroll. You know, we have a lot to see here.
So how would you describe the park's overall vibe to someone that's new to Texas State Parks?
I would say rustic, and I don't mean that in a bad way by any means. So San Angelo has a kind of historied past. So before we were a state park, this was actually owned and maintained by Army Corps of Engineers. And Army Corps of Engineers built the park because we have this dam that runs along the east side of the park called O.C. Fisher Dam. And that obviously created the lake in which the state park is surrounded by, or, you know, surrounds the lake. So a lot of it is kind of rustic in a sense where, you know, you see a little bit of the past of where the Army Corps of Engineers built all these boat ramps, all these day use areas. And so when you're exploring the park, you kind of see a remnant what was imagined of this giant like park. But of course, it's West Texas. And, you know, we're no stranger to, you know, some years we don't get a lot of rain and then some years we do. So it's always interesting to see different sides of the park where you could see where they had envisioned campgrounds and day use areas where the lake used to come up. And so I always shock people when I tell them, like, yeah, this part used to be underwater, but now it's a hiking trail. So having a little bit of fun with that. So rustic in the best way possible. If you have a sense for adventure or exploring and curiosity, there's so much to explore out here. And you can, like I said, find remnants of where the lake used to come up and where people used to be able to camp.
So are there any, well, I don't know, historic buildings or sites that visitors might overlook if they didn't know about them?
So we don't have any necessarily historic buildings other than, I guess, if you want to consider our restrooms. They are technically historical since they're, a lot of them are about 45 years or older. We do have a section of trail that is centered in the center portion of our park called Ghost Camp. And it gets its name because it used to be a old walk-in campground right off of our current campground, Riverbend. And so, you know, visitors can actually walk through an old campground. Again, we call it Ghost Camp. And so some people will make up stories about it being haunted. Whether that's true or not, I guess that's up to each visitor themselves. But you can actually walk through these old campgrounds. And as you're exploring different areas of the park, you can actually, you know, see where old parking lots and picnic tables have been. And some of our other structures, such as Armadillo Ridge, those are areas you can just hike right to and see what, you know, used to be. And we do have some old bathrooms and stuff that I always, like, encourage visitors, like, go out and explore. Because they always ask me, like, what do you do? And I'm like, I just start walking and I find stuff. And I, even as a ranger who's been here about a year now, there are still things that I have yet to find in my park. And I'll share that with my staff. I'm like, did y'all know this was here? And they're like, huh. So, yeah, there's a lot of park to explore out here.
So what is one piece of the park's history you wish visitors knew more about.
Yeah, I would, like I said, we used to be a core park. So some people forget that it wasn't always owned by the state. So some of the structures are, you know, predates when the state took over 30 years ago. But one thing I would always point out to visitors, you know, historic wise, you know, even before the Army Corps of Engineers was here, like there was a historied past with, you know, prehistoric Native Americans out here. We have some old rock art, which of course with time is slowly, you know, going away. And then of course we have dinosaur tracks out here, which always surprises people.
What?
So we're not like Dinosaur Valley where we have these like very distinct dinosaur tracks, but on the northern side of our park, we have a historied past that goes back millions and millions of years ago. And so it's estimated that these tracks come from the Permian era. So if you hike to them, you can actually get pretty up close to the tracks, but you can see where dinosaurs and other creatures, historic creatures, used to walk in some of the old riverbeds and stuff. And of course, back then they would have been gigantic riverbeds or ocean seas, of course, because Texas used to be underwater at some point or another. So Yeah, I think some of our history that, you know, some people don't get to experience as often is our dinosaur tracks. And that's one thing I love to tell kids about. Like, yeah, we had dinosaurs here at one point.
And I always thought it was just Nick and Government Canyons that had the dinosaurs, but there's your park now and Dinosaur Valley State Park.
Yeah. And we may not, like I said, have the distinct tracks like Dinosaur Valley does, but ours, like, you can clearly see this was a path that some creature took back in the day. And then, of course, you know, I'm still constantly digging through my office to see what kind of documents I have and what kind of history I can pull up for that. But yeah, we have dinosaur tracks out here. So not only recent history do we have, but we have prehistoric history here as well.
Well, so what do you think it means to park staff to be stewards of such a uniquely Texan state park?
So, you know, San Angelo, when we became a state park, a lot of the trails that you see today on our maps, they were created by the community. And so, you know, you're talking about these people that wanted a venue to exercise their outdoor freedoms and stuff like that. And so for me, being a good steward is, you know, maintaining that for future generations, which I know is a part of our mission statement, but genuinely, like, you know, we have this vast, great outdoor space that was, again, created by people who just wanted to be outdoors. And I like being able to tell people, like, if you're a good steward for this, you know, 10, 20 plus years from now, like, you'll be able to bring your family out here, or, you know, you'll be able to come back and experience it the same way, or hopefully maybe a little bit different as we get wiser with our own age. But yeah, I would say out here, a lot of these trails were created by the community, by stewards who wanted something more and be able to get out on their public lands. And so all the trails that you happen to see on our maps, a lot of these were created by passionate stewards who wanted the public to get out and see the park and get out to see the different, you know, landmarks. You know, without them, we wouldn't have trails to our dinosaur tracks, or we wouldn't have trails to some of those like cool little ghost camp features and stuff like that. So, and they also help us maintain it every day. So very appreciative of them.
Nice. So we know you guys have scorpions, buffalo, and longhorn. What other species of wildlife that visitors could expect to see there? And then I guess the second part of the question was anything that was rare but possible. So we have the beavers. So let's just go with the commonly seen. What can we expect?
And I'm not just saying this because I work at my park, but genuinely, San Angelo is like the most wildlife I ever see on a day-to-day basis. Even when I come in on my off days, I always see wildlife when I come out to my park. So you're almost guaranteed to see some sort of deer. We get javelina out here, which is essentially like a smaller version of a pig, but they're not pigs. So, and then we also get porcupines out here. And then you mentioned turkey earlier. We get herds of turkeys. And we do get bobcats. And then my favorite thing to spot out in the park is the roadrunners, because they will just look at you and then they'll just run across the road. Or sometimes they'll be sitting on a picnic table. And again, they'll look at you and they're like, okay. And then just wander off. And then, yeah, seeing like all the deer. We do get some access deer. So if anyone's a hunter on the podcast, we do get access. And, you know, people are allowed to hunt during certain seasons during the park. But yeah, I would say some of my most favorite to see is, especially if you come either in the morning or dusk, I love watching the jackrabbits that we get out of the park. And they'll just, again, they'll just stare at you and they're like, okay. And then just, they'll keep on doing their business. But we have such an abundance of wildlife out here. And so I truly mean it when I say you're almost going to see some sort of wildlife out here, whether it's a ground squirrel, a roadrunner, deer especially. We have so much deer. You're going to, especially if you've never really got to experience certain parts of West Texas, you will see some wildlife out here.
I was at South Llano last November. First time to, well, I mean, you know, traveling to the Quads, you see Roadrunner kind of run across. But this is the first time I had a Roadrunner encounter. So I was setting up my tent and turned around. Yeah. And this sucker started just walking up to me. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, and I had no idea. Maybe he was just a buff Roadrunner, but how?
Yeah, they can get pretty large. And they're one of those. I love spitting like some fun facts about them. So if you see them, first of all, give them a nice little kudos. Because if you ever look up on YouTube, they will eat snakes, specifically rattlesnakes. So if you are not a fan of rattlesnakes, which I know most Texans aren't, they will actually eat the rattlesnakes for you. And I always like to say they are like the wrestlers of the wildlife world out here, at least. And so they have a funny way of, like I said, if you look this up on YouTube, they will basically body slam a rattlesnake until, you know, it passes away and that's their meal. And so I have a very fond appreciation for our roadrunners out here. Aside from like the roadrunners, seeing them and the horny toads, they're just like very iconic to the West Texas scene out here.
Yeah. I mean, that sucker was coming up to me and I didn't hear it. I just turned around to do some, grab a tent stake or something. And he was within 3 or 4 mm-hmm. feet from me looking at me. And I'm like, all right, what's about to happen here? And it startled me how big he was. Like, I was like, there, what the heck?
And we see some weird things happen at this park. So, like, with our roadrunners, especially near our entrance station, sometimes you watch these, like, little songbirds chasing our roadrunners off. Or sometimes you'll see the roadrunners chasing the foxes, which when I was told that, I thought, are you sure you didn't see this in, like, some cartoon? They're like, no, we literally just watched a roadrunner chase a fox. And I'm like, interesting. Awesome.
What was funny is, you know, he's looking at me, then he just kind of slowly turns and kind of walks away and doesn't really care about me, but he just wanted to see what I was doing and I guess probably make sure I had the right pass. You know, I'm setting up the tent in the right spot. I don't know. So this is an important question to anyone that's planning a trip. And when I say that is, you know, like when you're planning a trip and you maybe to a state park or national park, you want to catch it in its beauty. So what are some of the seasonal changes in landscape that the park goes through that, you know, times of year that visitors should expect and kind of when to be there?
Yeah. So I think, you know, being there right when fall kind of happens, October would be one of the first things that comes to my mind. You know, even though we're kind of on the edge of West Texas in the desert kind of scene, we get quite a few fall blooming flowers. And of course, in San Angelo, we get quite a bit of the monarch migration as well. So especially on the north side of our park, we see a lot of monarchs coming through our town and also our park as well. So I would say like October, maybe early November is a really good time to visit, especially that's when we start seeing a little bit of the cool down. Of course, it's Texas, so we never know when that will happen because it's in Texas fashion. We get about 2 weeks of fall and then it's winter. And the other good time to visit is, I mentioned before, is coming in the spring and seeing all the different flowers we have. And they will bloom at different times too. So there's not really a bad time to visit in the spring. So I would say like April, May, you'll see lots of different purples, yellows, whites, and some of it, especially out here in the desert, the beauty of it's in the detail. So some of it you have to look pretty close, but we get a lot of different plants that come out here. Even on some of my wildflower walks, I've walked a trail once the day before to make sure I have the right flowers in mind to talk about and talk about the different parts of the flower. And then the next day, I'll walk it with everyone else in the group, and they will notice things that I didn't even see before. So I would say, yeah, come in the fall, see the monarch butterflies and some of the fall blooming flowers. And then, yeah, come back in the spring, and you'll see a whole new set of flowers that are being in bloom. And then, of course, we get lots of different kinds of moths and butterflies out here in the park.
So do you all have to battle any kind of invasive species?
Out here, a lot of times we're fighting with the mesquite, and mesquite is, while it's native to Texas, it grows prolifically. So out here, we are always fighting the mesquite out here, and especially this year, we had a lot of rain, so we've been kind of fighting the grass a little bit, but, you know, grass isn't necessarily a bad thing out here, because we get a lot of different ecosystems and regions kind of coinciding right here in San Angelo. But I would say mesquite is probably our biggest one, and a little bit of the prickly pear cactus. Not that we don't love them, especially the mesquite. They do provide some shade once they've matured and grew up. But them and prickly pears, they are very prolific growers. And so they will start growing in places we don't want them to grow. So sometimes making sure they stay in check is one of the hardest things that we have to deal with, especially when it comes to trail maintenance and stuff like that.
So after these six or so episodes that I've had with state parks, I am now a fan of, I don't care if the state park only has one visitor a year, make a reservation. I have learned the impact of not having a reservation and the amount of extra work that you guys have to do to get someone checked in versus if they just had a reservation. Like, even if it's, I want to go to San Angelo right now. Okay, while my wife's driving me there, I can make a reservation. Or, you know, like I'm driving, she can make the reservation. Even, you know, it's the same day. So for your park entry, are you on a timed park entry? Or is it just, you know, visitors can reserve a day pass and just and kind of show up? Or is it like, okay, you can reserve a day pass, but it's got to be between 8 and 10 and or 10 and 12?
Yeah. So we're very fortunate since we are such a large park. We don't have any timed entry. We usually never fully book out unless we're doing like a huge event or something like that. But, you know, a lot of times that's rare and far and few. So here, yeah, definitely recommend making a day pass ahead of time. Like you said, it just makes it more efficient for us. But you can also just come anytime and, you know, do the day pass. The biggest time saver is if you have a reservation for camping, because like you said, otherwise we have to ask for a lot of details and information. And my other biggest advice is, like, you know, if you're not already a Texas State Park pass holder, that will also save you a lot of time, because then you can just give your card. It has all the information already on there. It makes it so much easier. And I can't tell you how many times I tell people about not only our annual passes, but, you know, if you're a veteran, military, there are free passes available. And, you know, what more than just for you to have another avenue for you to explore your state resources, come explore your parks, and sometimes they're free. And so, yeah, come out and do that. And if you're an annual park pass holder, like I said, it has all your information and you get discounts, and it pays for itself after a couple trips out to the park.
I bought a park pass because I was I'm 52 now, but when on my 50th birthday, my wife and I, the plan was 18 state parks in like 8 days. And I think we got 15. And yeah, I mean, that paid for itself after just a couple.
Yeah. Especially if you're an avid camper, or if you're not, like I said, it pays for not only you to get in for free, but if you're traveling with friends, family, anyone who's in your vehicle gets in for free. And you get so many other little perks. So that's my little plug. If you don't have a state park pass, I definitely recommend it, especially if you're trying to get outdoors or if you're an outdoorsy person. It will save you so much money in the long run.
Absolutely. And it was funny, Nick, on his episode with Government Canyons, he had a host that counted how long it takes for someone that doesn't have a reservation and how many mouse clicks and versus if you had a reservation, and it was like 17 or 18 clicks to get you checked in versus 2 or 3 if you had a reservation. So that was like, oh my gosh, like that's definitely worth for us as consumers of state parks, make the reservation, get the park pass, you know, so
And the beauty of it is, too, if you get one, I recommend getting it at the first of the month, because then you basically get an extra month free. And a lot of different parks, you know, we all have our own different fees associated with them. So while my park may only be $4 right now at the time of recording, you know, if you're exploring other parks, or if, like, say you're visiting Austin, you want to hit Inks Lake or other parks along the way in Hill Country, you know, you can see daily entrance fees that go up. And as long as you're a pass holder, it doesn't matter how much the fees are. It's free for you because you have a state park pass. So, yeah, selfless plug there.
Absolutely. All right, and speaking of camping, do you offer any backcountry walk-in permitted camping spots, or is it all kind of car camping front country?
It's mostly front country. There have been talks of, like, possibly introducing some backcountry campsites, but of course that does take some time. But so for right now, it's just front country camping. So we do have water electric campsites available, and then we also have primitive camping, which, you know, you have access to water, stuff like that. And one thing that I would say is unique to our park a little bit, at least I haven't seen it at other parks, at least not to our scale. On the north side of the park, we actually have equestrian campsites as well. So we get a lot of people that come out and ride their horses, and sometimes, especially during rodeo season, they're looking for a place that they can still have their horses nearby, and they'll bring their RVs out and they can hook up their RVs to the electrical pedestals. And then we have, donated by our friends group, of course, we have little horse pens that they can let their horses kind of get out of the trailer, breathe a little bit, and they can feed and water their horses. So I think that's something that's pretty unique to San Angelo. Again, I can't speak for if I haven't seen it at other state parks, but having a specific equestrian campsite area where people can still go ride the trails, and then when they get back to their campsite, they have a nice little area where they can let their horses just kind of breathe a little bit.
I think I totally agree with what you just said. I haven't seen it at any state parks, and the only place that I've seen it in Texas is Guadalupe Mountain National Park, and I don't remember if it's at McKittrick or if it's at Frijoli Ranch, but there's right when you first turn in off the highway, there's a little equestrian area where you can pin up your horse. And I think it's even a place for if, like, a Pine Springs or something is totally booked out, then they'll have some campsites out there. But yeah, that's the only other place.
And I was going to say, especially during rodeo season, we get a lot of people that book out those sites. So like you said before, having those camping reservations ahead of time are very, very important during those certain seasons. And those can be very niche because, like I said, you know, not everyone has horses to come out and ride. But, you know, during those seasons, like rodeo season, yeah, they will get booked out.
So if you look at the park, and to the listeners, you have to right now go and get on the San Angelo webpage and get to the park map and see how massive this park is. I had no idea it is massive. It's on two maps. It's so big. So if you kind of get an estimate about how many total hiking miles does the park offer that are open to activities?
Yeah, we have close to about 50 miles of trails, so it's a lot. As I mentioned before, a lot of these trails were created with outdoor recreationalists in mind. So when the state park system took over here, a lot of local, like, bike associations, mountain biking clubs and organizations, they wanted to be able to explore their park. So they, in turn, helped us make a lot of these trails. So that's why sometimes you'll see them kind of crisscrossing, winding, waving. But, you know, like I said, the community really stepped in and they kind of helped create a lot of the trails you see on those maps today. And of course, we had so many named trails, but yeah, about 50 miles. So, you know, compared to some parks where, you know, a lot of parks, I feel like max out about 10, we have about five times as much. The cool part about our park is a lot of our trails are multi-use. So as I mentioned before, you can ride your bike, you can hike, you can run, and you can also ride your horse out on it. We'll also get running organizations that will host 25, 50, or 100 Ks. I don't know however many Ks it goes up to, but, you know, you'll have trail series out here and you'll see people running their legs out on these trails. And you get to see some cool stuff along the way. So, yeah, this was quite literally a park built by the community for the people to enjoy for themselves. So Yeah, I can say I was like, when they told me who made these trails, I'm like, yes, yep. Especially some of the winding ones. I was like, yep, this makes sense that a mountain biker would want this.
If someone's heading to the park, what are some of the more popular trails that you would think that they shouldn't miss out on, and why are they, I don't know, kind of special?
Something I would always recommend to visitors, it depends also, like, you know, what your distance length is like. A lot of our trails, you're probably not going to find anything too much shorter than a mile if you're talking about round trip. But our dinosaur trail is something I like to recommend to people. One, it's a little bit out there. Two, you get to see like a literal field of cactus and you feel like you're in the middle of nowhere, but town is literally like 5 minutes away. And you get to see some cool dinosaur tracks. So I always recommend that trail. For the first time visitor who may not be aware of the north side of the park and may be returning later, I always recommend trails on the south side of the park. It's a little more accessible. And some of my favorite trails, and I think that are really cool for visitors to see, there's two trails that I like to recommend. One is called the Red Dam Loop. It ends up being, if you go from parking lot, loop it all the way, it ends up being about 1.2 miles. About halfway through, you are on this old, what I call a jetty, but we call it the Red Dam. And you get a really awesome view of O.C. Fisher Lake and also the dam that borders our park. And then on the other side, you kind of see where the lake used to be. And then you also get to see the rolling plains. And I like to talk about the different kind of ecosystems or ecoregions that kind of come together at San Angelo. So the Red Dam Loop is obviously one of my favorites. I do that one for a lot of our night hikes as well, because you get to see the scorpions. You get a really nice view of the full moon and also the night sky a little bit as well. The second trail I typically recommend, it's a connecting trail, actually. It's called Tally Valley. It's actually named after one of our long-term volunteers and friends of the state park, Mr. John Tally. And if you're interested in his story, TPWD actually did a story over him called The Legend of John Tally. And he helped build a lot of the trails at the state park. But Tally Valley actually takes you into kind of one of our valleys, and I say that in quotations, and you go start from the top of a ridge, go all the way down, and you kind of see a different kinds of vegetation at the park, and then you come out of the valley, and it's really cool. You get some views of the lake, and then again, it's one of those parks that we're like 5 minutes away from town, but you're hiking these trails and you feel like you have the entire park to yourself. And Tally Valley specifically, again, I'll do night hikes on those, and then I've seen horned lizards out on it. I've seen so much wildlife and all sorts of different kind of wildflowers and stuff. So those are some of my favorites I like to recommend to people. And they end up being on the more moderate side. Again, everyone kind of bases their hiking experience on their own, you know, experience level. But I always say moderate for those just because we do have a lot of gravel substrate for our trails. And sometimes the elevation isn't always the most easiest on those particular hikes, but I really love them. They're my favorites to recommend also to our staff who doesn't get out the park as much.
I love parks where there's no crowds. And so I think that's one of the reasons why I love the Quad so much is, so I've hiked and backpacked the whole park, and there's areas that I'm usually in that I don't see anybody the whole trip, and that's 3, 4, or 5 days. And so I literally feel like this whole place is mine. Like, you know, it's, I'm the only one out there. So to a visitor that's not looking for like the crowded trails, some lesser known trails that you would recommend, maybe they would have that kind of experience where, wow, I'm like the only one here.
I was going to say any of our trails, you can get that feeling. Some of the lesser known trails that I like to kind of walk on, I say lesser known because not a lot of people hike on them. My choice of recreation is hiking, and there's nothing wrong with any other type of, if you're a mountain biker. I would say Winding Snake Trail or taking one of our popular trailheads is called Burkett. And so sometimes I will park at Burkett Trailhead, and you can either go down Winding Snake, which is a great little place to explore different things, but I'll also walk down Burkett Trail, and I'll connect that to other trails that happen. And a lot of times I will snake my way up to a ridge on actual trails, of course, and there's, if you take Burkett and you connect into Potts Creek Trail System, you can actually walk up to a ridge called Armadillo Ridge. How I got the name Armadillo Ridge, I'm not quite certain, but there's a pavilion on top with the name Armadillo Ridge. So sometimes if I'm looking for a little bit of a challenge, or if I'm looking to sweat a little bit more, it's a little bit off the beaten path of what people typically take at the park. So I'll start at Burkett and walk my way to Armadillo Ridge. And so, yeah, and one of the guided hikes I do every month, I do a monthly women's hike, actually, and we switch up the trails we do every month. And sometimes we do those lesser known trails. And I tell them every month, I'm like, you know, the purpose of this is to, one, build a sense of community, and like, you guys feel safe exploring the park with yourselves. So we always have fun exploring the lesser known trails out here. There's a lot to explore.
You just said, you know, you're hosting a women's hike. Before we get too much further, because I don't want to forget, what is the best way that our listeners can get connected with you to see what programs you're putting on, like these special hikes, and, you know, kind of like what's happening at the park?
Our website is a good resource. I'm also a little bit more impartial to updating our Facebook, and I do post flyers out on our Facebook ahead of time. So coming soon at the end of this week, you'll see our September events being flown out. And yeah, so just our website, Facebook. Sometimes you'll see us also on, there is another state parks page where people will post like options, opinions, and also their favorite trails as well. So yeah, Facebook and website are your best options. And then of course we're on Instagram as well, but Facebook, I do have the option to do event pages. So a lot of times I will add event pages so people can get reminded of things and everything else.
So if we kind of break up the trails, we have the equestrian, the hiker, the mountain biker. Are all those trails open to all three of these lifestyles? Or is it like, oh, the equestrian is like kind of the north part? Mm-hmm. Like, how is that all?
I was going to say all of our trails are multi-use. So at any given time, you can find some people riding their horses on the trails. A lot of times we have a pretty robust mountain biking community here. So a lot of times you will see mountain bikers, especially early in the morning, hitting the trails hard. We do have some regular horse riders out here. And so any trails are open to them. I think the only exception is we have a trail close to the front of our park called Roadrunner. And that one is mostly just for hikers, people that are just looking to stretch their legs, stroll around. Any other trail aside from Roadrunner, those are open to any type of recreational use. So whether you have a horse or you're looking to get into mountain biking, there are all sorts of difficulty levels for you to start at. So whether you're a beginner or if you're feeling really experienced, there are some challenging trails for sure out of the park.
What about, are the trails dog friendly?
Yeah, so all of our trails are dog friendly. As I mentioned before, some of the trails are a little bit more gravelly than others, but as someone who, I also have a dog, and I love to take him out because he gets to mentally explore the park and sniff everything. I haven't heard any complaints from him. So, but yeah, we are all dog friendly as long as they are on a leash. You are welcome to come explore the park with your pet. And every time I work our little entrance booth, we have some regular people that will come out in the morning and walk their dogs, get them tired out for the day, and then, you know, go back home and have fun with it.
So the OC Fisher Reservoir, can park visitors fish?
Yeah, so you can fish OC Fisher. You know, about a year ago, it was actually quite funny when I first started. You'll see these pictures online, and I was like, oh, cool, we're going to have a lake at the park. But last year, if anyone's local that's listening, you would know that we were basically a dried up puddle. And then, you know, shortly after I had started here, we got some good rain. So we're like, cool, we have 5% of a lake. Got it. Awesome. Amazing. We have a lake again. And so we work with our inland fisheries, and they will stock the lake with game fish as well as fish to help build up that food chain and pyramid up again. And then, of course, this past summer, we got quite a few good rains in. So we're sitting at about 18% capacity for our lake, which is great for us. So visitors looking to come out and, you know, utilize the lake, they can go paddling out on it. And they can also launch boats, of course, with their own due discretion. But yeah, you can fish out in the lake. How good it is, I don't know right now. But I imagine it's not too bad, especially with the rains. We get whatever's coming down river, for sure.
So for the visitors, and let's say we cannot say bring more water, what are some common first-time visitor mistakes that you see? And how do you think a first-time visitor, can be better prepared?
I think for us, you know, just know that our trails can be a little rugged. So a common question I get asked a lot is, you know, can I bring a stroller out on the trail? And unfortunately for a lot of our trails, you know, unless you have some of the more off the beaten path strollers, we don't necessarily recommend it other than Roadrunner and stuff like that. I would say the other biggest thing that, you know, especially out here, there's a lot of opportunities to slip, trip, and fall, especially with loose gravel. It's just always like, whether it's in your vehicle or if you have a little backpack or something you carry with you, just have like a basic first aid kit. That way, if you do have to slip, trip, or fall, you can always like bandage yourself up, or of course you can always call a ranger. But yeah, I would say that would be the other thing. Aside from water, obviously snacks as well, because you never know. You could be sweating and then, you know, you could sweat all of your electrolytes and salts out. And so I would say snacks and, you know, just always have a backup first aid kit. That's my personal thing I always carry with me. That and sunscreen. Sunscreen's always there's not a lot of shade out here. So, you know, if you do come out and explore, do pack some sunscreen for sure. Don't want anyone to leave crispy.
Or sun hoodie. Man, I started using a sun hoodie about 3 years ago. And that is the greatest thing since sliced bread. And I don't care if it's winter or summer. You know, you think about Guaz, you're at elevation. It's, I don't know, 30 degrees outside and there's not a cloud in the sky and that sun is still cooking you. And so, man, to the listeners, sun hoodie, sun hoodie, sun hoodie.
Yep. And especially if you're coming out here, like I said, a lot of people will stop here on their way to Davis Mountains, Big Bend. And as someone who just started using the sun hoodies, especially out there where you may not have the most access to like replenishing your sunscreen and stuff like that, get those UV sun blocking hoodies. They're not as heavy as what you were probably making them sound out. They are breathable. So you can feel free to sweat in them, but you will not get burnt in them. I absolutely love it.
I haven't tried all the sun hoodies. I've tried my fair share. And let me tell you, to the listeners, I'm not getting paid to say this, Outdoor Vitals has a wonderful sun hoodie. I have three of them. I have two of their, I don't remember the fabrics. I have two like wool ones and then two like kind of a, I don't know, fancy fabric ones. They're very reasonable priced and I absolutely love them. So, and I'm not getting paid to say Outdoor Vitals, but they make some great ones. All right. So this is something that I really enjoyed when I had the episode with Aaron at Purtis Creek. Can you talk about, I don't know, any projects or how the park is set up concerning the adaptability or accessibility features for the park?
Yeah, so we do have a grip wheelchair. So anyone that, you know, is wheelchair bound and is looking to explore the trails, we do have some options where you can borrow one of our more rugged wheelchairs to explore the park in. We are actually slowly working on becoming a little bit more ADA accessible, both with like our restrooms, like I mentioned before, some of them are considered historic buildings because they've been here so long. So we're actually working with our cultural resources to update those and making those compliant, along with all of our parking lots and stuff like that. But one project, it's going to take some time, of course, you know how the things work out. But one of our accessible options that we have is our wildlife viewing blind. People can actually drive right up to it. And you see tons of birds out there. And a project that our friends group and also our staff is working on is getting an ADA accessible trail starting from that viewing blind and kind of going around almost like an inner loop of the Roadrunner trail if you're looking at a map as you're listening. And so those are some projects that are in the works. They're in the planning stages right now. So we're very thankful that our friends group has helped fund for that. And they've been really driving that conversation of really pushing for those kind of ADA trails. Because we get a lot of people out here that they just want to, you know, just take a nice little stroll outdoors or just watch the birds. And so we've had some really good friends helping out with that. We've just been slowly renovating portions of the park as it's come along. So we're kind of going out with the old and we're slowly becoming new. So there's a lot of like ongoing projects that are happening right now. But I think that ADA trail is one of the bigger ones that's, you may not see the progress right now as it's in the planning stages, but hopefully soon, within the next couple of years or so, we'll have that going for us.
That's wonderful news. And I don't remember in what episode, but I think it's a kind of a common thing with the state parks, and this is really directed to the listeners, that we can get involved with these friend groups and make these donations that go directly to the park and that impact in a very positive way to the listeners. I don't know that every state park, I think Purtis Creek was working on trying to get a friends group started, but that's, if you have a local park and you want to support them, that's one way, just to find out if they have a friends group and get connected. So
yeah, I was gonna say a lot of parks do have friends groups, and those are a great way to get involved. Again, you're in a group of people who are passionate about that specific park and being stewards, and a lot of times they help us raise money for projects that they really want to see done in the park. And of course we work with them a lot. I know I have a really good relationship with our friends group. So sometimes they'll ask me like, hey, can we help do this outreach? Or would you mind talking to our group and stuff? So it's always a good conversation to have with them. And if a park doesn't have a friends group, you know, if you are very passionate, you know, maybe ask the park about starting one. They might already have some interested individuals to help start that. And then, as I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, some parks may not have friends group, but they will rely on Texas Master Naturalist. So if you are interested in becoming a Master Naturalist, they do trainings and you get to learn so much about your local nature and resources. And a lot of times they will also, they'll put in for grants and loans and stuff, and they will raise money for state park projects. So I've seen it happen before.
Nice. So if you look at your suite of educational programs as an interpretive ranger, what are some of these that you're most proud of that visitors have access to?
I was going to say coming to San Angelo, like I said, it was a different working environment for me, coming from Southeast Texas, the swamps and stuff like that. So I would say for me is, you know, really getting comfortable with night sky programming. So for me, really being able to offer star parties to people, you know, you might not think it, since we're so close to town, that you probably think everyone in San Angelo realizes there's a state park, but unfortunately not everyone does. So doing those like evening programs, especially in the summer, have been not only very eye-opening to me, but it gets people outdoors and they're not like sweating their butts off. But I've been able to offer star parties, and you know, people don't realize what's above them as, you know, they're traversing their town or in their own backyards. And I've gotten to make some really good community connections through that. And then, as I mentioned earlier, I've taken groups scorpion hunting, and then this summer I've also done a moth program, and you know, just really shown people what's out there that they're not typically thinking of. I've done also other programs as well, but yeah, doing those like evening programs have been one of my more prouder moments. And then every month I like to do something a little crazy or a little special. So this month I was talking about the weather, and we were looking at the different clouds in the sky, and we actually got to do a little science experiment where you get to make a cloud in a bottle. So we get a little creative here, but I'm really proud of our night sky programming and where it's come from. Because a year ago I was anxious and nervous because I'm like, what if I tell them it's a wrong star? What are they going to think of me? So, but now I feel more confident. And I also work, like I said, with our astronomy association, and they are a huge help to me in providing their resources.
You know, it's funny you say the star program. I haven't released it yet because I still need to record a part two with Claire and Hannah from Enchanted Rock. And you could tell when Hannah started talking, answering the question about one of her star party things. And it really hit me how you take on a responsibility for these educational programs and the pride that you have. And also, you know, she was probably going to, I made a clip about this, her telling the story, and she was going to have to cancel it probably because of weather. And I don't know the backstory. Someone called and said, you know, she was hoping that it wasn't going to get canceled because she wanted to see the Milky Way one more time before she passed away. And that, like, I almost started crying.
Yeah.
Really, to the listeners, these programs, take part in them. All the people, could be volunteers, it could be, you know, like the interpreters, take so much pride and put so much effort into these programs. And it would be a shame that we as visitors don't take part in them.
Yeah, and I was going to say the caveat to that, too, is like, you know, we can't have a program without visitors either, you know, especially with these nice guy programs. I try my hardest to not cancel them, but unfortunately, like, you know, you're at the whim of how many clouds are going to be in the sky or how the viewing's going to be. My last star party, I was really trucking through. I thought it was going to be 30%, and then in a span of a couple hours, it turned into 70% cloud coverage, but we still did it. We got to view the moon a little bit. And then, of course, the crowd was still just, they had really good energy. And so we had to kind of do some different activities than looking at the stars. So, you know, like I said, without you guys, there is no program. So we appreciate you taking letting us like have some fun with it, especially when we have to get a little creative due to weather or clouds covering up the sky.
You know, it's funny. I would visit parks. I would never pay attention to the programs. I'm here to hike, and I'm just going to go hike. I was in the quads one time, and Ranger Leah, she always checks me in, or she's always getting my backcountry permits. And I'm like, all right, Leah, I want to do this, 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 and this. And she goes, not at your age. So she helps me plan out something better.
Yeah.
She was giving a program. And you can YouTube this. It's called Assault on the Mountain. And it was, I think, late 80s, early 90s. There were five hiker people, but they were in wheelchairs. And their goal was to hike, climb, wheel up to the highest peak in Texas. And it took them 5 days. Out of the five, three made it. But she was giving a program, you know, like, so... It was just me and my two hiking buddies, and we're sitting there, and so, you know, we're supporting her. I want to listen to the story. About 20 minutes into it, I'm crying, I'm tearing up. You know, she has tears. My hiking buddies, we all have tears because she did such a wonderful job, and it was such a wonderful story. So if I would have had the mindset that I probably normally do, like, oh, I'm just here to hike, and I don't pay attention to what's going on, I would have missed out on that. And
you learn a lot of cool things at these programs too. Yes. We try to make it as fun as we can. Especially sometimes if you're talking history, it may not be always the most fun subject, but it really helps. Like, our goal is to help you connect to the place, so that way you have a reason to want to protect or come back to it. So, like, you know, here in San Angelo, like, yeah, you, like, this is, I always tell people, this is your backyard. Like, this is what we're here for. These are things you can see from your backyard, but, you know, we get to have a lot of fun with it. And I think that's also a little bit of the fun part of my job, is like seeing how creative I can get to get you to either stay in my program or want to come out to my program. That's always the fun part as well. And like you said, we, especially in this field, we all, especially as interpreters, we all have different stories to tell, and we do our best to connect you to the land. So, you know, we try to get you to, you know, show why it's important, like why we are a state park.
Yeah, so it's important. Reservation. And when you're booking that reservation, check out the website, get connected, look at the calendar, see what's happening while you're there. Or if you forgot to do that, but you still made your reservation, when you get to the park, ask, are there any programs in the next couple of hours or the next couple of days if you're camping, and get connected. I promise you, I guarantee you, from the Trailblazing Texas podcast, you will enjoy yourself and you will learn a ton.
my side note to that too, if there happens to be no programs going on, ask for a Junior Ranger book, whether it's a state park or a national park. A lot of times we'll have site-specific pages and stuff, and those will help guide you through your experience at the park or gets you to like look at things a little bit differently. I know for state parks and as well as national parks, if you do the Junior Ranger, one, you will come out learning something brand new. And this is for adults too. I have no shame. I will go into national parks and other places and I will ask for their Junior Ranger book because it's one of the best ways to explore. And you get a cool little souvenir after the end of it, after, you know, being a little nature nerd for a little bit, especially if, like you mentioned, going out to like Big Bend or the Guadalupe or any other national sites, you get like cool wooden badges. So if you want to be budget friendly and you still want to explore a park, you can do that. And like I said, this is open for adults too. Some parks will actually have senior adult versions of the book, but a lot of times they'll just give you the Junior Ranger book. And I feel like a little kid exploring the park when I do that.
And maybe in your opinion, what do you think, especially as massive as the park is, what do you think are some of y'all's biggest challenges? Like you're in meetings with site superintendents and, you know, all this kind of stuff. Like what are some of your biggest pain points, challenges for such a diverse park?
I think one of our biggest challenges is because we're so big and we're so vast. You know, aside from myself and maybe a little bit of our maintenance guys or some of our regular volunteers, we don't always get to have eyes on the trails. So we really do rely on our visitors to relay information back to us. You know, if a tree had fallen on the trail or if there's hazards that exist on the trail that we may have not been able to get out to quite yet, that's one of our biggest challenges out here is just, you know, we have so many miles of trails. Sometimes it's hard to make sure we're keeping up with all of them all the time. You know, right now we have 3 trails closed because we just quite literally don't have the man hours or the equipment right now to get out to them. And then of course, you know, with some of the recent storms we've been getting, some visitors have been really good about, you know, telling us like, hey, there's a tree down X miles down this trail. And I'm like, I really appreciate that. And then it helps out our maintenance guys and myself to get out there and clear that away. But yeah, like the caveat to that is, you know, we do get some really amazing volunteers out of it too. Yeah, like you said, we're so big that sometimes hitting all the trails and making sure they stay maintained is a little bit of a challenge, especially with all the grass growing back right now. There probably are some areas that are a little overgrown or need some attention. So sometimes we don't always get to go out to the spots that are looking a little rough.
No. And so maybe what is one thing that you think the staff takes huge pride in that maybe a visitor like myself showing up at the park will never see?
I think that we take a lot of pride in, we are a small staff, but big park. So we take a lot of pride in the fact that, you know, we may not always have the manpower and the staff to always do stuff, but you know, we're able to do a lot with what we have. We're very resourceful here, and that's not always shown. You know, a lot of times we do get questions from the public on some of the projects we're doing, and then, you know, we take just 2 minutes to explain them, like, hey, this is what we're doing, this is what our goals are, this is what it's going to be in the future, and they're like, oh, okay, awesome. And then they see, like, you know, right now we're working through some renovations on our playground. And they're like, oh, no, our playground. I'm like, don't worry. Like, good things are going to happen. And, you know, you see what our playground used to be. And they're like, oh, only, like, 2 people took that down? I was like, yes. And they worked really hard on it. So I think a lot of what our staff is really proud of is the amount of work we're able to do and how resourceful we are with what we have. Yeah, we're very proud of that.
Nice. I love that answer. So if I look at the park in a whole, first part of this question is how is cell service? And this is definitely going to lead into the next question. Is it spotty? Is it pretty much covered?
I was going to say here in the park, like I said, we are close to town. So for the most part, I mean, I can only speak for like having T-Mobile and whatever else.
Right.
I have had full service on any number of our trails the entire time. So you will have at least some semblance of cell service when you're hiking our trails. So if you do happen to get lost, and it has happened before, we've had visitors that just call our front desk and they're like, can you help me get me back to where I need to go? Yeah. And I'm like, absolutely. So yeah, you'll feel like you're in the middle of nowhere, but you will have cell service almost guaranteed out in the park.
So if you're a listener and you're an Instagram influencer, you will have, you can Usy time the whole trip. The second part of the question was, how do you handle emergencies?
A lot of times, you know, we're very fortunate that we haven't had any huge emergencies out in the park. We have some park police officers who will be like the first ones to hear about it if there's a 911 call. Again, a lot of times, depending on the severity of the emergency, you know, a lot of times people will call the front desk and they will tell us what's going on. And they'll send either me out or one of our maintenance rangers to go respond. And yeah, we'll take care of it from there. We have lots of little maintenance roads, and we work closely with our law enforcement and also first responders to make sure they have the most up-to-date like access to those areas. And again, our park police officers, they're always constant communication, and they'll give them updates. So yeah, anywhere you're at in the park, there is a maintenance road that can get us close or right to your spot. And so that is super helpful when it comes to, like, you know, say you did trip and fall and you needed emergency access out there, we can get you out. Nothing too strenuous or too bad.
All right. So as we kind of start to wrap up, what do you think are some of the long-term goals of the park over the next five or 10 years?
I was going to say, we do have some long-term goals. You know, like you said, we are slowly but surely renovating a lot of our facilities, making sure they're ADA compliant, and also, you know, bringing them up into at least another century or two. So we realize we do have some dated stuff in the park, but there are some things in motion to get those updated. We've had a lot of great support, not only from the state, but our region to get us the resources to do so. I know we've been working towards, you know, having maybe not to the same semblance of Cap Rock, but, you know, letting our longhorns kind of free roam the campground. And then, yeah, we're always constantly working towards, you know, maintaining our trails, making sure our signage is good. So I know personally for me, I have a goal to work on our trail signage and making sure that it's good for the visitors, so we don't get any lost visitors calling up. So those are some of my personal goals. And I know, like, with our other staff, they are working on mostly, like I said, getting our facilities up to date and stuff like that.
And so, in your opinion, what is one thing that visitors can do to help preserve the park?
Yeah, just being really good stewards. You know, if you're not quite sure what that means, you know, if you come out to a state park or any outdoor space, just make sure you leave a space either as you found it, or even what I always like to say, leave a place better than you found it.
Yeah.
So, you know, make sure you pack in or pack out what you packed in. Don't leave any trash. And, you know, if you see something cool, leave it for the next visitor to find as well. There's just because you thought it was cool, there's other people that would like to see it as well. So always practice the leave no trace principles. So, you know, always, you know, take memories, take photos, but leave only footprints kind of deal. And that's just being a good steward, and, you know, being kind to the staff. You know, a lot of us staff, we get frustrated mostly when we see litter in the park, and, you know, as visitors coming in, you don't want to see trash in the park. So, like I said, for your average person coming into the park, just make sure you're cleaning up after yourself, and if you're at least, like, leave the place just as you found it, if not better, is my biggest takeaway.
And if you're a listener and a visitor, do not throw your orange peels on the trail. They're not going to decompose.
I was gonna say, especially out here in West Texas, they will sit there for years to come, and our animals don't necessarily eat it. They may, like, look at it, but they won't, nothing will happen to it. So that orange peel will stay there for a good long while.
Absolutely. So whatever you pack in, pack out. Mm-hmm. And it's funny that you say, I'm going to tell them myself, but it's funny that you say, you know, don't touch anything, you know, leave everything. And
you can touch anything, just don't take it.
Well, I was at Mustang Island State Park because my youngest was going to Corpus Christi A&M for a year to try to, his goal was A&M. So again, we got there and they had a program on, and I'm like, oh, we're going to do the Ranger program. So we drove to the parking lot, and it was neat because you got to throw spears at a buffalo, but it wasn't the spear like you hold in your hand. It was like a slingshot spear thing. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what they're called.
We call them addle-addles.
That's it. It was a blast. Well, I was talking to one of the Rangers, and we were talking about, you know, the park and stuff, and he had some arrowheads and this and that. And I was like, you know, there's two things left for me to do at the Guads, and that's I want to see a mountain lion and I want to find an arrowhead. And he looked at me and he goes, if you find the arrowhead, you're not going to pick it up, right? And I'm like, well, I was going to. And he's like, no, you're not. He goes, you know, leave it.
They always say to leave, especially those historical artifacts, because especially if it's of significance, they'll call in a team. And a lot of times, like, you know, they'll check it out, and there might be other things that they uncover.
Yes.
So the moment you take it away from a certain spot, you know, it's hard to reattach it to a certain place and how it got there and stuff like that. Yep. So we always say, you know, take pictures, you know, do all that, but just make sure you leave it in its place, because, you know, the next visitor might want to see it, or it might have a special significance for being in that certain place.
Yeah, so I changed my bucket list to finding an arrowhead and taking a picture.
Yes.
Not the arrowhead. But it was just funny, and I'm like, okay, you're absolutely right, Mr. Ranger. You're absolutely right. I need to practice what I preach. So, last couple of questions. What do you think the biggest need for the park is right now? Is it funding, maybe awareness, volunteers, people joining the Friends group?
Yeah, I think...
all the above.
Almost all of the above. I was going to say, you know, people who are local listening, get involved with our Friends group. They are some of our largest volunteer groups. They help maintain parts of the park. They also are kind of our eyes and ears for the community. So I would say, yeah, get involved with the Friends group. And they also, like I said, they help raise money for the park for us to do certain projects or get supplies that, you know, we can get pretty quickly. Yeah, I would say, you know, Friends group, and then vicariously through that, you know, volunteer at the park. Like I said, we have a lot of trails. So a lot of times when people reach out asking how they can help out, I'm like, can you please help me put eyes on the trails? And a lot of times we'll send them out and they'll help clear out the mesquite that might start overgrowing in the trail. Especially right now, like, we have a lot of areas that, like I said, we haven't been able to get eyes out on it. So always volunteering. And then, like I said, Friends group, if you're not able to physically come out here, but you have connections that can help raise money for projects in preserving these outdoor spaces for others, by all means, like, please join our Friends group, and also just, you know, help the park out in any way you can. Like I said, I think the best thing anyone can do is just being a good steward when you come out to the park.
All right. So what legacy do you hope San Angelo State Park leaves for future generations?
I think for us, like you said, we have these opportunities that other state parks don't. So I want to be able to leave the legacy that this is an outdoor space for everybody, where you can come out, you can ride your horse, ride your bike, or just hike. Or if you're not an outdoorsy person, you could still come out and enjoy, like, the outdoors in a sense where you can come see our longhorn, or you can come see the bison and kind of leave that legacy. I know for me as an interpreter, I really want to be able to, you know, whether I stay at this park for till the end, or if I'm just here for a couple years, for me, my legacy that I would like to leave is just being able to connect the community to the park and letting them know that this is a resource for them to come explore, especially school groups. And I've been working with the library a lot where I'm like, you know, this is for you guys to enjoy. Like, please come out, like, and have them experience, like, seeing a bison for the first time, or seeing a longhorn, or just even seeing, like, a rogue deer or javelina for the first time. So for me, the legacy is just letting the public know that this is here for them to use and for them to continue to use for as long as we're here for. not only recreationally, but, you know, if you're a family looking to provide and you go hunting, like, that's an opportunity that we have here, and letting people know that we're also a part of the community, and we want the community to know that we're also a part of them and have them utilize what we have.
Nice. All right. So I know earlier I said the most important question was your favorite Texas hiking podcast, but I think this is the actual most important question. It is the very last question of our episode. For someone that's never been, what is your pitch for why they should visit?
So if you've never been to San Angelo, first of all, I want to say you're in for a real treat. So this is a great gateway park for, you know, if you've never really experienced the outdoors. First of all, we don't have as many mosquitoes as East Texas. you get to see the bison and the longhorn. And all of this can be really experienced from if you don't want to leave the vicinity of your car. If you're trying to get into the outdoors, we have 50 miles of trails. So you can come explore all 50 miles if you so choose, or you can do 2 miles or a mile and a half and start there. And like we mentioned before, you don't need to, like, you know, we're 5 minutes away from town. So if an emergency happens, you have a town right away. For all the Texans that are listening, we have 2 HEBs within 5 minutes of the park. So there's a lot of, like, amenities close to town. So, you know, if it's your first time camping, we are a really great park to start at. So you can feel comfort in knowing, like, if you get spooked in the middle of the night, there is easy amenities to, just outside into town. Mm-hmm. And like I said, we're close to HEB and Walmart. I feel like that's usually the biggest seller, like knowing you don't have to drive 45 minutes or hit a grocery store on the way in or be lucked out and stuff. But for me, coming out to San Angelo and having now worked here for about a year, there's just so much to explore. So whether you are just starting out as an outdoor or hiking enthusiast, or you are an experienced hiker, there's a trail for you out here. And I encourage you to come find your favorite one, because every time I ask somebody, they all have different trails that they really love. And experience it in different ways, too. Whether you have a horse, or if you have a bike, or if you like to travel on your 2 feet with your four-legged friend, there is a lot to explore out here. And I love this park so much that I even come out on my off days and I hike with my dog. And he loves seeing the bison as well. So yeah, it's one of those you will feel at home here, and there's lots to explore. And if you are looking to camp here and explore the town, San Angelo has such a rich history. We have Fort Concho, so you can see live reenactments. They actually do fire the cannon sometimes. And then if you're not into the historical stuff, you can actually go walk around downtown. You can walk along the the Concho River, and you get to see the really beautiful downtown. They have some really cool shops. I think they have one of the only handmade boot stores they have. It's called Letty's. Really? And stuff. So like, you can camp or come explore the park, but then you can stay to explore San Angelo. There's a lot of little cool little art pieces and history in the town that you can come explore. So there's a little bit of everything for somebody out here.
Nice. Well, Kenny, this has been a wonderful episode. I think you sold the park really well. The next time I'm heading out to the Quads, I am definitely making a detour. I will definitely let you know when we will be heading that way.
If you do happen to in the wintertime, not only does the park do some holiday events, but San Angelo goes all out for some of their lighting along the Concho River. So especially that's the best time to explore West Texas when it's not brutally hot in the summer.
Awesome. Well, I can't thank you enough. And I know I always say this, I am thankful that for taking the time on your Saturday to come on the podcast. And, you know, me saying thank you doesn't give it any, it's just, it's words. I haven't found the right words to really, to come across of how thankful I am. I think this episode is definitely a benefit to San Angelo State Park to get the viewers, the listeners connected with the park, how they can help, all the wonderful things that you all are doing. And, you know, and hopefully you're going to have lines out what do you guys call where the people come in to check in, the entrance station. So again, thank you, and you have a wonderful rest of your Saturday.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And that wraps up another exciting episode of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. We hope you enjoyed the episode today, and stay tuned for our next episode where we will pick back up where we left off and guarantee to uncover many more hiking gems and share many more tips to enhance your experience on the trail. Until then, happy trails and happy hiking.